Right now, I'm very happy to welcome to our program investigative reporter Greg Palast, good friend of this radio station and this program. Greg, as you know, has long been an award-winning investigative reporter, broke the stories about the 2000 vote purge in Florida during that insane election, and author of some important New York Times best-selling books, including The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, now an award-winning film documentary just released in a new post-election edition. And we're very happy to welcome you back to our program, Greg. Thanks for making time to be with us tonight.
Glad to be with you, Scott, again.
And I wanted to start off talking about a very sad piece of news that I saw this morning, and others may already be aware of it, but a frequent guest of this program, and I know a friend to many in our audience, Robert Perry, who is the award-winning investigative reporter who broke many of the Iran-Contra stories in the 80s in the Reagan era and founder and editor of ConsortiumNews.com, has passed away. And, you know, he shed light on so many important chapters, very nasty chapters of American foreign policy. And I learned so much from him, and I know our audience discovered a lot about their own country and its intelligence services and government policies, disturbing but important for all of us to know. And to see that he has passed away was just, it hit me hard, and I know it probably hit you, Greg, as someone who knew him well. Maybe you could share some of your thoughts about Robert before we get to our topic this evening.
Yeah, well, in a way, he is the topic for this evening, because it's all about, he's all about what the American media didn't tell you. He was lionized worldwide. He won the Martha Gellhorn Award in Britain, which is for the English language outside the U.S., like the Nobel Prize for Journalism last year. I would call him the most fired reporter in America. He did break the Iran-Contra story with AP, and instead of the Pulitzer Prize, he was fired. Then he went to Bloomberg and Newsday and Newsweek and got fired there for his investigative reports. Went to the Nation investigative unit, and there he talked me into, I wasn't even a reporter yet, into investigating a couple of brothers you'd never heard of called the Kochs, David and Charles Koch, and their kind of criminal political right-wing crime spree. He was really the very first journalist to get onto those characters. That was a good 25 years ago. And so he put me on the trail of the Kochs. When you see my new film, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, there's a whole animation about how the Kochs made their money. 80% of that is the reporting of the great Robert Perry. And, you know, he first, was screaming, pay attention to these Koch guys. The Nation was very uninterested. Like, they got rid of them because, like, who wants to hear about these, some guys from Wichita, right? He ended up basically publishing his own books because he couldn't stand the way he's being censored by big publishers, and publishing his own news reports, Consortium News. Definitely, and in my opinion, the investigative reporter of investigative reporters, the guy I wanted to be when I grow up. Wow, we miss him.
Indeed, yeah. I was just surprised to hear it. And
yes. Well, he apparently, for those who are wondering, he had, apparently he didn't realize that he had pancreatic cancer. The doctors didn't catch it until they said it after the fact, when they finally caught it just a short time ago, that he must have had it growing for 4 or 5 years, and they didn't catch it. It is, so we're all kind of shocked, and it's a great loss. I was just, corresponding with him just weeks ago.
And I know Robert Perry's son has written a piece, an extensive piece, summarizing the high points of Robert Perry's very successful investigative reporter career. Maybe you could tell us are there plans to keep Consortium News going?
Yes. I won't let it die. I'm going to start. I haven't been writing for Consortium News, but now I guess there's a bit of an opening. So I'm hoping that there's the greatest investigative reporters on the planet. Respect this guy like John Pilger, and we'll make sure those pages stay funded in full.
Excellent.
And so that's really important to me. Consortium News. We don't want to lose it, because you may not have heard of those reports, but they drip in. Where do you think the New York Times and others finally, when they finally get a story, where do you think that they originally get it from? Because there's virtually no one today who does original investigative reporting. It's expensive, it's time-consuming, it's difficult. And so Perry just kind of did it and hoped that his material would be picked up. And sometimes it is, and sometimes it takes 12 years to get his stories picked up, like the stories on the Kochs.
Well, certainly you're following, as you said, in Robert Perry's footsteps in terms
yeah.
of the hard work of investigative journalism that you practice.
Enjoyable work, by the way, because I start realizing that it's because I do this work that other reporters don't do, but it's because I like it. I like spending hours going through documents and papers and account books. I actually get a big kick out of it, as does my sidekick and co-investigatrix, Lenny Badpenny. And we do the stakeouts and stuff, and it's exciting and it's interesting to us, and it's uncovering puzzles and getting to the deepest, darkest corners of some pretty nasty billionaires. And actually, that's one thing I think that drove Perry. He enjoyed uncovering this stuff, you know, and it was less important how much TV time you get or air time. Or, you know, a column inches on a newspaper with the daily, responding to the daily, tweeter in chief, you know, whatever the Twitty says today, I'm sorry, I'm going to try to ignore it, you know, and stay with the long story. The guys, you know, even in my film, I said, when I talk about the best democracy money could buy, about Trump stealing the election, it's not Trump, it's the billionaires behind him who engineered the theft of the 2016 election, and that's kind of the big story that gets missed. And following, finally, it took like 20 years for people to notice Bob's work on the Koch brothers, and by the way, uncredited, they'd stolen with two hands, but there are other billionaires that then I've picked up and hunted around the planet who are also behind this new right-wing putsch, which put Trump and Ryan and McConnell and the rest of the gang in power.
Well, may Robert Perry rest in peace, and his righteous outrage continue on, and I know it will.
It will.
Yeah. Well, anyway, to get to our topic that we invited you here to discuss, Greg, it's your latest investigation involving President Trump's so-called Advisory Commission on Election Integrity, which you've covered from its outset and certainly followed in this film, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, Chris Kobach's very deliberate effort to purge literally millions of votes across the country to give the Republicans and the right wing in this country an electoral advantage. As many of our listeners may understand, there was an announcement early in January that President Trump was going to be scuttling that commission. But that's not the end of the story. And maybe this is a good time for you to kind of frame for us what that commission was supposed to do and what happened to it and the rest of the story that, unless you're checking out Greg's website, Greg Palast's website, you don't know about.
Yeah, well, first of all, the Trump Commission, so-called Presidential Commission on Elections Integrity, is really, you know, what they call the Trump Fraud Commission, to prove that there's electoral fraud. You know, that literally Donald Trump and the guy put in charge of the commission, Chris Kobach of Kansas, can't remember that, just think KKK, Chris Kobach of Kansas, the Secretary of State there, has claimed that a million people swam the Rio Grande, I kid you not, to vote for Hillary. And in addition, 3 million people voted twice. Now, the mainstream media laughed at this charge, and you know, as far as they were concerned, the commission was a laugh. I'm not laughing as an investigative reporter because I've been following this Kobach well before the commission, now for since 2013 on his trail the last 5 years, knowing that he was working with Trump. He was the first politician, major elected official to endorse Trump, and with other right-wing groups, and funded by the Kochs. Remember, he's out of there, Bailiwick, Wichita, Kansas. And to come up with systems to remove voters. So you may laugh and say, ha-ha, there's no people swimming the Rio Grande to vote for Hillary, except they're removing people with Hispanic surnames. And that's what they really wanted to do with this commission. That's the first order of business. So originally, Trump met on January 10th, privately with Donald Trump to say, here's what you got to do. You got to run the system of removing Hispanic voters from the voter rolls by using the powers of Homeland Security, and we can all do it in secret. Trump decided instead with Pence, let's have a public, public commission. One problem with the public commission he found out, first of all, they had to find a Democrat. They found one. Not the sharpest knife in the drawer, the Secretary of State of New Hampshire. And one Democrat to make it so-called bipartisan. Well, they immediately started operating in secret. They wouldn't even tell the Democrat when the meetings were, what's on the agenda, what are they doing. And when you have a presidential commission, guess what? We have a government of and by and for the people. We have freedom of information. You've got to reveal what you're doing and who you're doing it to. They wouldn't. They got scared. Kobach recommended shutting down the commission. And a lot of progressives said that's a big victory. In some ways it is, because we forced them to close that commission. The problem was they took their nefarious activities and they stuck them into the Department of Homeland Security, where they can put the shroud of national security over their doings. I don't know if it'll be successful, by the way. You can't just mark something national security, just say when you're removing black and Hispanic voters from the voter rolls and say it's part of the war on terror. And, you know, it depends if we have some honest judges, they're going to crack that open. The problem is the mainstream media has been laughing about Kobach and his claims, laughing about Trump and his claims of voter fraud. If you watch my film, you'll laugh because I do a lot of dark humor in there, but you won't laugh about what they're doing. They did remove, ready, 1.1 million voters of color from the voter rolls before the 2016 election. That absolutely handed them Michigan. It had a great deal to do with handing them Ohio, North Carolina, Arizona. These were states that were in Kobach's purge programs. And so what you get in the film is the investigation about this commission in Kobach well before the commission starts. In fact, I even jump Chris Kobach at an ice cream social in Wichita, because he wouldn't talk to me, of course, so I pretended I was a local news crew. I got one of those little handheld mics with a cube on it that said 4, so they thought I was a local newsman. Yeah. And I got through to Kobach and confronted him with the evidence that he was removing innocent voters, saying that they were double voters. People, for example, James Brown. He said everyone named James Brown is the same voter. I can't make that up. And I showed him. He was basically accusing James Thomas Brown and James Edward Brown of being the same voter. And, of course, he's screaming at me. He was running away from me, screaming, liar, liar, while he's trying to eat his vanilla ice cream, by the way.
There was one scene where he's got his arm around you, I mean, with a big smile on his face. I guess that's before you asked him some of the tough questions.
Yeah, well, I told him, you know, I came in. He didn't recognize me at first, which is great, because it was like, you know, like one of those shifted things. You don't expect to see me show up in Wichita. And I've got the little, you know, handheld Eyewitness News microphone. It wasn't a complete lie, by the way, because with the number 4. But I wasn't NBC US. I was Channel 4 of London. So I actually was a Channel 4. But I, you know, made a local news crew. And I just grabbed his hand. It's a trick I do. And if you're a budding investigative reporter and you want to grab a bad guy and they want to run away, shake their hand, but never let go. And so he kind of puts his arm around me. I said, you know, start out with a compliment so you get right in. You are the number one, I told Kobach, you are the number one fraudulent vote hunter in America. He was so pleased. And then suddenly you could see the look on his eyes. I see who's here. But he was able to begin sneaking away because suddenly we had to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. You know, it is Wichita, right? And it was like, so, you know, it's dark humor, but it's it's tragic because in the end, for all the jokes and the comedy, a million voters of color got wiped out, and we ended up with a guy who really, if everyone got to vote and all the votes are counted and ballots counted, Trump would not be president. And that's the real issue that we have to confront.
Greg, what do we know about this Kobach Commission and its mission to hunt down these quote-unquote fraudulent voters across the country? What will the role of the Department of Homeland Security be in that mission?
Well, we're going to try to find out. One of the things that's happening, in fact, literally as I'm talking to you, I was in the middle of, you interrupted me, Scott, from writing a memo to the head of the ACLU in Kansas, because we are hitting Kobach with freedom of information requests. So I'm working in coordination with the ACLU and with some great attorneys at, to try to blast out the information about what's really going on. The other thing is we're hitting all the state governments because, you know, there was a big hoo-ha that, again, the progressives were doing a victory dance because Kobach had asked for all the voter rolls of all the 50 states for his little commission. And he got turned down, supposedly, by 44 states. But what 29 states didn't tell you is that they'd already given him their voter rolls, sent to his office in Wichita for a system he calls cross-check. That's a system of you know, accusing people of voting twice because they have similar names, James Brown, Jose Garcia, etc. So they'd already turned over the list. So a lot of these states were lying. You know, they were saying, oh, we don't do this stuff. In fact, and some don't even know that they sent the list because the governors don't always know. Terry McAuliffe was shocked when he was told, you know, you sent your voter rolls to Kobach. He said, I thought we said no voter rolls to Kobach. And I said, yeah, but here's the evidence. In fact, Kobach office gleefully said, of course, Terry McAuliffe's state gave us his voter rolls, no matter what he says, because they got them. So, we have to blow it open. You cannot just stick something in Homeland Security and say that it's now you know, black box, you know, spy stuff, and you can't see it. I've done Freedom of Information Act requests and gotten information out of the FBI and out of the CIA and the Defense Department. You know, national security is not a cloak. We're supposed to keep secrets from, you know, the other guys, not from the American public. And that's where we're going to have to fight out.
What are the special powers that the Department of Homeland Security has? Their special police forces and ICE itself. What can they do that Kobach's commission couldn't?
Here's what I'm afraid of. Okay, I have a very specific fear, which I haven't seen printed yet. You have to understand what's going to happen and what Kobach originally proposed to Trump. We know what Kobach proposed to Trump, by the way, because he showed bits of his, as he was having one of those photo op pictures taken, he showed a bit of a, and you'll see in this film, he showed a bit of his memo to Trump. He was holding it in his hand. And if you blow it up 100 times, which is what we do, you can see a fair amount of the memo. And then a judge said, well, this is a public document now, buddy, so you got to make it public. So we got a lot of it, 80% redacted. But here's their game. They're going to take the deportation list from immigration, from ICE. Okay, so there's a guy named Jose Garcia who is deported from Florida. And then they're going to check the voter rolls, and you know, and he's sent back to El Salvador. Then they're going to check the voter rolls, and they're going to find, oh, my God, there's a guy named Jose Garcia who's on the voter rolls of Florida. That must be the same Jose Garcia that we deported, and he's now back on the voter rolls of Florida. And so we're going to have to remove him. Or demand, and they've done this before, by the way, demand that Jose Garcia is on the voter rolls, come in and prove that he's an American citizen, not the guy that was deported. Now, you, Scott Harris, are not going to be asked to prove you're an American citizen. Greg Palast, I have a unique white name. I'm not going to be asked to prove that I'm an American. But imagine, we had thousands of people. They'd started this in Florida already a few years ago. Then it was stopped by the Obama administration. But now they're going to try to fire it up again, especially now that ICE is under Homeland Security. And that's their big plan, to take the deportation lists and put them against the voter rolls. And you, seeing how Kobach handled those matches on cross-check with the middle names, 2 million middle names did not match. Junior and senior were matched as one person. So you know, and it's going to be just a list of people named Garcia and Rodriguez and Kim, a lot of Asian Americans who vote Democratic, by the way, even more. And by the way, Asian Americans vote more Democratic than Hispanic Americans, though it's kind of a race. They're all about 75%. And they were dragging people into court saying, prove you're an American. We're not Red China, by the way. We don't have citizenship cards. Your social security number, your driver's license. If you're an alien, like Lenny Badpenny, my investigatrix, she has a social security card and a driver's license. That doesn't make her a U.S. citizen. And so you have to, how do you prove you're a citizen? You have to have a birth certificate. You have to have a passport. Not many poor folk have passports, and they know that. That's the game. You know, and so this is a really, really dangerous thing. And I go back to the example of when the last time they tried this, but the Obama administration stopped them. They took deportation lists in Florida and accused 181,000 voters in 2012. Republican Governor Rick Scott, 181,000 voters of Florida were accused of being potential aliens who can't vote. 181,000. They made all these people, you know, people go to courtrooms and all this stuff until it was stopped. They caught one single alien voter. One. A Republican from Austria. That's it. That was their big... But in the meantime, other people were wiped off the voter rolls, maybe never got back on. It was this type of ethnic cleansing of the voter rolls is what I'm worried about.
Well, along with what you've already said, Greg, what is, in your opinion, the biggest threat to the integrity of the vote in 2018 that a lot of people who are opposed to Trump and the Republican agenda are hoping will turn things around in Congress? The House of Representatives may be flipped, as some polls predict, and maybe even the Senate.
Well, what we've seen is that the polls, including the exit polls, that we have something called a redshift, where the numbers come out different than the polls. How does that happen? The answer is that funny term, vote suppression. And the biggest, my biggest fear, I know a lot of people are afraid of, you know, electronic voting machines and stuff. I'm not saying don't worry about it. You got a lot of things to keep track of, to worry about. But the one thing we're not spending enough time on and thought on and action on is the prevention of Americans, the preventing Americans of color from voting. And students, by the way, that's also another target group that they go after. Students and voters of color. And basically, when they go after voters of color, it means going after poor voters. Like things like, we all are familiar with these laws about ID. Well, who doesn't have a driver's license? Guess what? People who don't drive, people who don't have cars. It tends to be poor Americans or students. Again, demographic. The others, who is accused of voting twice? People with simply common names like Jose Garcia. Again, Democratic demographics. I'm not here to support the Democratic Party. I'm here to support counting every vote and letting Americans vote. It's crazy. I just got back from Switzerland, by the way. They're stunned. They watch my reports on television, and it's like they're just flabbergasted. What is this that people don't get to vote? There, you have to vote by law, right? So they help you. They figure out ways to make sure that you can submit your vote and get to the polling station, or sometimes they just have public meetings. But what I'm saying is, the rest of the world is stunned at everything that we do to block voters. We think it's okay if you get away with it. That's what I'm concerned with.
Yeah. What were you doing in Switzerland, Greg? Tell us, are you hanging around with the hoi polloi in Davos? What were you doing there?
Somehow I never get invited to Davos. Can you figure that out? Can you imagine?
I thought you crashed the party there.
So I was with Ms. Badpenny, our investigatrix. She's actually Swiss, and we're in a fight because I think she should become an American as well, and she's resisting. But it's fascinating to go there and talk to the people about our electoral system, because they know all about it, by the way. The average European They watch my, because there I'm on, you know, the nightly news in these places. So they're more familiar, actually, with our voting system, things like purging voter rolls and Chris Kobach than most Americans. And they just, but they actually don't believe it. They say, this is really true. You mean, you really, you know, not let people vote? You know, figure out or discount their votes. Like, the other thing we have is we have a lot of ballots thrown away. This is interesting. A Swiss company wanted me to endorse their paper ballots. Because if you remember the butterfly ballot, we have a lot of ballots, which are just in you'll see in my film, 75,355 paper ballots were not counted in Michigan, out of Detroit. Trump won by 10,000 votes. You know, you break it down. You do the numbers. I mean, Trump lost Michigan if you counted those ballots out of Detroit. So they were because the machines couldn't read them properly. So a Swiss company said, we have a foolproof paper ballot. We never have these problems in Switzerland. Would you endorse our ballot? I said, me endorsing your ballot will kill it off with every Republican Secretary of State in America. Yeah. Yeah. The second is, you have to understand, they don't want to count the votes in Detroit.
All right.
The reason the votes weren't counted in Detroit is that they knew the machines couldn't read, the old machines couldn't read the new ballots or would break down. And the city and county, Wayne County, which is Detroit, asked for new machines before the election, but they're a bankrupt city. They had no money. They're under the control of a Republican city manager appointed by the Republican governor, and he said, no, we're not spending money on new voting machines. Well, why? Because he doesn't care if the vote, in fact, they don't want the vote counted. So I told the Swiss, no, I can't, there's no sense endorsing your product, because if I said, this is a ballot that will, you know, in poor neighborhoods, will, you know, will be impossible to fill out and will never be read, that I could probably sell. But a good ballot, that ain't going to happen.
Greg, we're out of time, I'm sorry to say, but thank you so much for spending time with us tonight, as always, shedding light on the things that we horrified at, but need to know. Yeah. So thanks.
With the new release of The Best Democracy as of this week, it's free on Amazon Prime. So there you go. They can't beat the price. So thank you so much, Scott.
And the website is gregpalace.com, and you can find the recent investigations on the Kobach Commission, et cetera, right?
You got it. Thanks,
right.
Scott.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Greg. Good night. That's Greg Palast, investigative reporter, and the new movie he's got is the post-election edition of The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. That's it for our program tonight. Thank you for listening. And Writer's Voice is coming up now. This is WPKN in Bridgeport.
Is the Me Too movement enough?
For me, until or unless we're willing to engage in that conversation about the deconstruction of patriarchy, then this movement may not develop the roots that I think it rightly deserves.
That's Rob Okun. We spoke with him in 2014 about his book, Voicemail, The Untold Story of the Pro-Feminist Men's Movement. Today, we air part of that 2014 interview, but first we talk with Okun about hashtag MeToo and hashtag Time's Up, and how men can support that movement. Then, the pioneering science fiction writer Ursula K. Le Guin died on January 23rd. We air our 2012 interview with her about her short story anthology, The Unreal and the Real. That's all.